This is A Course in Miracles Radio, a program for students and teachers of the complete and annotated edition of A Course in Miracles from the Circle of Atonement, a nonprofit sharing the spiritual path of the Course since 1993. A Course in Miracles Radio is hosted by Robert Perry and Emily Bennington and can be found online at circleofa.org.
Hi everyone, I am Emily Bennington with the Circle of Atonement, and this is A Course in Miracles Radio. I'm in the studio again with Robert Perry. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Emily.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Here we are again.
Here we are.
And today we are covering an article called What is A Course in Miracles? This is an article that Robert wrote in response to the perennial question, how do you describe what A Course in Miracles is? It's a 2,000-page book, right?
Well, it is now, yeah.
So how do you sum that up quickly? So we're going to go point by point through this article, which you can find at circleofa.org/1. And you can download the article and follow along with us, or you can just listen in. So, Robert, oh my God, where do we even start?
Well, I think the place to start is why I wrote this. And that is that I found myself having great difficulty answering the question, what is A Course in Miracles? I didn't want to be asked the question, even though I was a course teacher and writer, and that was my vocation. And what I slowly realized was the problem is when you learn about something new, what you want to know is the category it goes in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the example I give here in the article is there is an Indian religion from India called Jainism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most Westerners haven't really heard of it. And so
I thought it was Jainism. Did I get that wrong?
I think it's Jainism. But
I think it's Jainism. Who's right? Put it on Facebook.
If you ask someone what that is, what you're looking for is what bucket it goes in, what category it belongs in. So when someone says it's a religion, then that gives you a lot of your answer, right?
Right, yeah.
And what I realized with the Course is there really is no category, no ready-made category. It kind of occupies its own category. And so once I got that, I thought, you know, actually, there are a lot of categories that it goes in, but that don't completely describe it. And so the article is one in which I have a list of 9 categories that it fits in with, you know, caveats, and that only by putting together those 9 categories do you get a sense of the, you know, the one category that it occupies all on its own.
So essentially what you're saying, it's 9 things in one bucket.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's only, in that bucket, there's only A Course in Miracles.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to start with 1? It is a channeled spiritual teaching.
Right. That's the first category, a channeled spiritual teaching. And that's a familiar category these days. It wasn't always that familiar.
Yeah.
Although there have been for a long time, there have been books and teachings that essentially were channeled. I mean, going back to the days of mediumship in the 19th century and early 20th century. And so, for the last 30, 40 years or so, that's become a much more familiar category. You know, there's some book, and it came rather than from a human author, it came through a human, and their account is that they're just receiving these teachings from some non-physical presence. And there's been a lot of very influential books, you know, like the Seth books, for instance, that fit that mold. And so we're familiar with that idea, and that's one of the main categories for the Course.
Okay, so aside from the Course, what are your favorite channeled books?
That's an interesting question. Before I got into the Course, I was really into the Edgar Cayce readings.
Mm-hmm.
they were very influential for me and many spiritual seekers, especially, I think their influence is perhaps on the wane, but, you know, a lot of people sort of came through that gateway. And I loved their emphasis on God and on Jesus and on seeing the Christ in other people and serving. I thought there was a lot of really wonderful, solid spiritual truth there. Another teaching that's been influential for me is the guide lectures. It's called the Pathwork.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a body of material that came through a Jewish woman in New York State in the late 50s to late 70s. And it's very psychological. And I just think very highly of that material. But I've read tons of channeled. I used to really almost be a junkie with channeled material.
Yeah.
Because I like the idea. I think basically in terms of truth, I think us humans are really confused. And I like the idea of
we need help.
Someone up there who's got a better picture than we do and finds a way to, you know, inject it down onto this plane.
Do you give much legitimacy to the Seth material?
I never liked the Seth material.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a turnoff. I felt it was too into all these intricacies of you know, alternate realities and not, I felt, I always
not practical.
Felt.
Practical.
Not practical, but also I always felt that the keynote should be love,
mm-hmm.
and that there should be an emphasis on God and an emphasis on our relationships with each other. Also, I've always been a big Jesus person, and his account of Jesus, I think, is bananas, to be honest.
Okay. Oh my God, Robert Perry just said bananas. Okay, so I could totally focus on this,
right.
But I don't want to move on, though,
okay.
without one more question related to the channeled spiritual teaching pebble in the bucket that is a Course in Miracles. But do you believe there's a lot out there that claims to be channeled by Jesus? Is there any of that material that you would say is legitimate other than the Course?
Okay, can I just back up, because we're trying to describe what is the Course in Miracles, and all I've said about this first category is that it's channeled.
It's because I've got you on a tangent.
So let me get back to that, okay?
But you have to answer that question, though.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So in terms of describing what the Course is within this category of channeled spiritual teaching, the story, which Course students themselves know, but there may be listeners who aren't Course students, obviously, is that Helen Schuckman, who was a psychologist at Columbia University in New York City and professed to be a militant atheist. You know, she was one of those people, and her type has become very popular these days, of kind of a science-based atheist who believes that science has shown that, you know, there's nothing beyond just what we can see. She had a profound moment of joining with her colleague Bill Thetford after a lot of years of conflict, in which they joined in wanting to demonstrate a better way in their department, which was full of conflict. It wasn't just between the two of them. And she began having spiritual experiences after that, visionary experiences, heightened dreams, psychic experiences. And that culminated after a few months, several months, in hearing an inner voice, which said, "This is A Course in Miracles, please take notes." And that began 7 years of taking down the dictation of this inner voice. Okay, so back to your question. You know, as a Course interpreter, and my job is to delve into what the Course says in detail, I haven't found the channeled teachings that I've seen that purport to be from the author of the Course, I haven't found them to be particularly accurate in terms of the Course. I've also found them to not have the range. Like, there are hundreds and hundreds of topics addressed in the Course. The Course community, the community of students, talks about a handful of those topics. And if you read the channels out there, they tend to reproduce that handful. Why aren't they talking about all those topics that are there in the Course, that are important in the Course, that stretch throughout it, that no one's talking about?
Yeah, so you just feel like they're regurgitating the same broad themes that are out there in the lexicon of the material.
That's my experience that to a large degree, they are to some degree bound by the conventional wisdom rather than having fresh sort of, you know, unimpaired insight into the book itself.
Yeah, that's one thing that you see throughout the course is the reframe of an idea that you almost took for granted that you thought you understood, right? Like you just like simple ideas that are just completely turned on their head. And what I find most interesting about reading some of the cameos in the back of the complete edition of A Course in Miracles from the Circle of Atonement is the way in which Helen wrestled with the teaching. So as it was coming through, she would wrestle with it a bit. And that to me, was a really, really fascinating thing because in some ways it almost made the text seem more legitimate to me that it couldn't have come from her because she didn't understand what it was that she was taking down. Or at least she didn't believe
true.
A lot of it.
I think along with taking it down came a certain amount of understanding that was part of the transmission process. It wasn't just words she was hearing. I think there was kind of more of a knowing around those words too. However, her understanding was far from perfect, and you see it with her editing. Mm. She often edited things in a way that showed that she didn't understand what she was editing.
Yeah. Okay, so we should move on.
Yes, we should.
Okay, so number two, a modern educational course. So
that is one of, I mean, that is the category the course puts itself in right on its cover. It's a course.
Yeah.
Right? And it's composed of a text, and it has a workbook, and there's a manual for teachers. There's a teacher's manual. So it's employing.
But it's a self-study guide.
Well, that's not something, as you know, that I agree with. Never says that. It's taking that form. But like it does so frequently, it's taking that form, using it, but transforming it while it uses it. So, for instance, you know, its text is not just teaching you body of information or even a body of ideas, is teaching you a body of wisdom that is meant to profoundly change your whole mental and emotional outlook and end up changing your way of living and your behavior in the world. The workbook is not giving you just sort of exercises like homework or even exercises like you would do in a lab in school. It's giving you basically exercises in the form of spiritual discipline. Again, meant to transform you on the inside and meant to be deeply experiential in terms of spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the manual for teachers, it's not assuming a classroom situation. It's assuming that those who have become experienced in this path will become one-on-one mentors to new students. And they will assume not so much the role of classroom teacher, but really the role of spiritual guide, a very ancient and venerable and crucial role in world spirituality, where you have somebody further along in the path who takes a new student under his wing and shepherds that person along the path in a way where if they just had the book, they'd be like climbing the Himalayas without a Sherpa. You know, you'd be falling into a crevasse. So you'd be exposed to all kinds of wrong turns and dangers without that guide.
Yeah.
And so he's taken, the author of the course, has taken this model of an educational course and used it, but transformed it from the inside.
Okay, so as somebody who has developed courses in the past, you always start with your primary learning objective. So if you were to answer the question, what is A Course in Miracles' primary learning objective in one sentence, what would you say? I'll put you on the spot.
In one sentence.
Robert is squirming.
I think if I had to pick a single thing, it would be the course that the course is trying to teach us to see with vision, to see with true perception. And that's a way of seeing in which we see the world profoundly differently. We see a divine radiance in everything, and so we love everyone and everything in a way that is really beyond our ability right now. So that's, if I had to pick one, it would be that.
So why isn't it called A Course in Vision?
I don't know, but miracles are meant to, are as inner shifts, they're meant to get us to vision, and as external expressions of love, they're meant to express that vision in the world so that it can have a healing influence on others.
Oh, good save. Good save, Perry. Okay, so number three.
Okay.
A public communication from Jesus.
This is one of the more controversial elements of the Course, where, you know, the author, the inner voice that Helen Schuckman heard, didn't make a big deal about this, didn't talk about it a whole lot, but clearly talked as if he was Jesus. And that's consistent throughout the book. He talks about his birth as what we celebrate as Christmas. He talks about his disciples, about the gospel stories about him, about his crucifixion, his resurrection. There's no ambiguity there. He thinks he's Jesus.
Yeah. So what do you say to Course students who say, I'm into the material, I like the book, but I'm just not all that into Jesus? What do you say to them?
You know, I think that's permissible. I don't think it's ideal in terms of what you can get from the Course, because first of all, if you do think it's from Jesus, then the same teachings carry a lot more authority. They carry a lot more weight. Also, I think that, you know, the benefit that he himself sees in there is that you can form a relationship with him. He says he is available for us all to have a relationship with him. And then he can be a more active influence helping you in your journey with the book. So there's a lot of benefit to be had if you can reach that point where you think that this really is Jesus. And I don't think you should just take that as a matter of faith. I think you should go through a process, because it can't be proven.
Yeah. So I know you do not have a quick answer to this question, but it's one that always comes up when you mention Jesus in association with the Course. And I'll phrase it the way that it's typically phrased. Is this historical Jesus that is the author of A Course in Miracles?
And what does that mean?
I knew it wasn't quick. So that's the question that's usually posed. I'll put my own sort of overlay on it. Okay. People make a distinction between historical Jesus, the man that walked the earth, and the icon Jesus that has been created almost mythically by Christian faith. So those are two separate beings as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure as far as you're concerned. So to which version, when people say, I like the Course, but I'm not into Jesus, I tend to hear that as, I'm not into that evangelical Christian Jesus that I've heard so much about, but that guy is different from the wisdom teacher who walked 2,000 and some odd years ago. So not a quick point to make, but Robert's looking at me like, oh my God, Emily, why did you lead us down this path? But I do think when you say the Course is authored by Jesus, that it's important to put a caveat on that, because that Jesus is so misinterpreted and misidentified. So,
okay, let me start with my own history with that and circle back to answering your question. I was always deeply interested in Jesus, and the Course's claim therefore intrigued me. But one thing that could be seen as disqualifying that claim is that the Course's Jesus is not like the traditional Jesus. He doesn't ask us to believe in him, doesn't talk about dying for our sins, doesn't say he's the only begotten Son of God, doesn't tell us to accept him as our Savior. What helped me was learning that there's been two centuries of biblical scholarship, a quest for the historical Jesus. And even though the scholars haven't arrived at a final portrait, they've confidently concluded that that image we have of Jesus does not match the original guy. Mm-hmm. And what's been very influential for me is that so much of what New Testament scholarship has concluded sounds like the Course. There are so many things that they've uncovered with some reliability, I think, about him that really sound uncannily like the guy in the course. So in my view, it's exactly the way the course talks. In the course, he talks as if he had this ministry on earth, and we think of that ministry as ending. And he goes up into heaven, and he sits up there waiting to come down and judge. But I don't know what he does up there. He judges a lot. But what the way he talks in the course is that ministry didn't end. It just kept going. It just expanded so that he could reach everybody at once. But the same ministry is still going on.
Yeah, and that my experience of the course was I picked it up almost as a reaction to the Bible, in the sense that I found myself to be a spiritual person, but I was looking for a path that wasn't quite so dogmatic as what I grew up in, and went to the course almost running from the Bible, only to find that in the course, he's pointing us back to the Bible so many times. And so I was able to read the Bible with fresher eyes as a result of the way in which the course itself points us back and says, read it again, you know, always.
Yeah. It's interesting because there is this collective sense, I think our culture has, that there's got to be like hidden books, secret material out there somewhere that has the real stuff. And my experience, and this is a major interest of mine, is that there are some profound spiritual teachings in the Gospels.
Yeah.
It's not all of it. I think a lot of it didn't come from him. I mean, the Gospels were written down decades later, and folk wisdom had grown up in the meantime that didn't come from him. But scattered throughout the Gospels are teachings that are truly profound and deeply spiritual. And those teachings, in many ways, echo the course.
Yeah. So it's an expansion to your point, and to my point, it's a loop back. So it's everything, right? So it's a loop back to the Bible, but it's also a continuation of the story.
So, yeah. 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 I love the idea that his ministry never stopped. He's still doing it.
Yeah. It's amazing to think that is true.
You're listening to A Course in Miracles Radio from the Circle of Atonement. We invite you to learn more about our complete and annotated edition of A Course in Miracles, featuring 45,000 words of restored text, extensive footnotes, and 33 cameo essays that apply Course wisdom to everyday life. To order the complete and annotated edition of A Course in Miracles and receive our free bonus package of gifts, visit circleofa.org/bonus.
Okay, so where are we? We're on four.
A
psychological system, both theoretical and therapeutic.
Yes. The course, as I think course students all know, is deeply psychological.
Yeah.
And that's something that I gained a new appreciation for in editing the CE, because one of the things that we did there is if there was a term, like a psychological term, we would define it in a footnote so people could appreciate the meaning that it lent to whatever sentence or paragraph it was in. And there are a lot of psychological terms in the course.
And a lot of Freud discussion.
A lot of discussion of Freud, mentions of Jung, and Rank, and a few other psychologists in passing. He talks about Freudian psychology a great deal. He refers to behaviorism a couple times.
Most of that was taken out of the
Foundation
for Inner Peace version of the course because it was too specific to the world.
I think Helen and Bill felt that it was there to give them background. But in my mind, I mean, again, I think this is Jesus. And I want to know what he said, what he was trying to convey. And so for me, it's more useful to learn, okay, well, when he refers to Watson, who was Watson? What was Watson about? He was the founder of behaviorism. And then that comment suddenly I understand his whole comment, which in Watson's case was about the unconscious. And I'd rather fill in my knowledge about Watson than have the whole thing just snipped out.
Right, yeah. Because then it's there, it's on the page, you can form your own conclusion versus not even knowing what he would have said to begin with. Yeah,
yeah, and in Watson's case, what he said, he referred to a paper that Watson had written about Freud's view of the unconscious in 1928. And Watson characterized Freud's view basically making fun of it. And the idea was that just like you can swallow a sharp object that you really shouldn't be swallowing,
yeah,
and it goes down into your stomach, and it continues causing problems down there until it's either removed by a surgeon or it gets crusted over. That's Freud's view of the unconscious. We swallow these damaging thoughts. They go down into the stomach of the mind, the unconscious, and from there they continue to cause disturbances until removed by the psychoanalyst. Mm-hmm. And Watson thought, this is ridiculous, and Jesus was saying, no, that's how it is. Now, wouldn't you want that description of the unconscious if you're a course student?
Yeah, totally. But it makes me wonder, okay, well, who's really ejecting that shard? Is it the psychoanalyst or is it the Holy Spirit? Is there a distinction made between the two?
Well, I mean, you know, in the courses system, it could be either one. It could be, you know, it could be you yourself. But the point is that thing needs to be removed.
Yeah.
You know.
Whenever I hear course students say, well, it just looks too complicated, you really wonder, like, if this is from Jesus, why on earth would that ever come to someone's mind to say that it's too complicated? Here we are out there on archaeological digs, digging up football fields of earth, trying to find one tiny scrap of paper that may or may not have some sort of religious significance. And here we have this fully formed, amazing scripture that has come to earth, but it's too complicated, so we're not going to dive into it.
I think part of that is we tend to have a mentality these days, which is very much like spirituality is like a smorgasbord, you know, and you're walking down the buffet. Yeah, and you're just kind of taking what works for you, what suits your taste. And I think
Some Jainism.
Yeah, whatever. So I think that where we're heading, I hope, is where people, rather than just sampling and hoping to have, you know, the lovely experience this weekend and a different experience the next weekend, where people think, I'm going to settle into a committed practice with my path, and I will, over years, delve deeper and deeper into it. And when you're in that mode, you think differently. You know, you don't think what's easy, what's the low-hanging fruit. You think, I want to plumb the depths.
Yeah. Yeah. Give my life to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, number 6, a path of enlightenment. Unless there was something else you wanted to say on that point.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go on.
Let's go on.
Yeah, well, the Course, in many ways, feels very Western. And, you know, you get there's the figure of Jesus. You know, there's that kind of sort of scriptural image hovering around. But in other ways, it's deeply Eastern in its spirituality. And, you know, in the East, there is this image you have. If it's not so much, you know, there's the prophet and he's speaking forth the words of the Lord, the main figure in the East is the realized master. Right, and he has gone through this process of shaking off the illusion that lies so heavily on all of our eyes, and he's used techniques of spiritual transformation like meditation, and he has somehow managed to shed his ego, and he's become enlightened. And now his mind is a container for, you know, whatever reality really is, and he can then impart that to us, lead us along the path that he walked to the same goal that he achieved. So that's the image you carry, really. I mean, it's kind of the stereotypical picture you have in relation to Eastern spirituality, that, you know, the realized master. And the Course so fits that model, where you have only here the realized master is Jesus. He comes to us saying that he reached the end of the road. He wasn't just this messenger sent from God who had to die for our sins. He was somebody who woke up. He became enlightened. He then transcended everything, his ego, his body, you know, all of phenomenal existence. And from his perch in what the Course calls heaven, he's in a position to tell us, you know, the real story. He's gone all the way to the top. He knows it all. And he's going to guide us along the path of salvation that he took, presumably, at least that he sees now as being the optimal path. And so there's very much a flavor, there's a vibe of Eastern spirituality with the Course, where following a realized master or an awakened guru, we're doing that as Course students, only our awakened guru is Jesus.
So if enlightenment is, if we could sort of loosely describe it as transcending the ego, and that is something that Jesus attained while he walked the earth, why is it so hard for us? Why can't we get there?
I think that, well, yeah, from the Course's standpoint, he attained whatever measure we can attain on earth, and that enabled, in the Course's teaching, there's this idea that God, once your perception is perfect, you're perfectly in vision, God takes the final step and quote-unquote lifts you back into the heavenly state of knowledge, which you can't really have on this earth, or you, if you have it, you can't maintain it and stay on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we so far behind? I just think that that's the nature of the game here. There are some people who, maybe it's past lives, you know, who knows, but who just are spiritual geniuses.
Yeah, I guess what my point was, if enlightenment is the goal, and enlightenment is the and Jesus is the model, and enlightenment is defined as the complete transcendence of the ego, then is that almost too impossible to even want to get there, you know? Can we transcend our ego in these bodies?
Well, I think that progress in that is a generally slow thing. Even if you're having the most... Even if you're having the most mind-blowing mystical experiences, I think your actual spiritual progress is probably going to be fairly slow. You're going to be a lot like the rest of us where it really counts, which is once you come out of the experience. I think it's generally slow, but it's the only game in town. I mean, from the Course's standpoint, we're not really human beings, and we're really divine beings, and so our desires in their original form, you know, desires that course through us right now are kind of distortions of our actual desires, and if you can kind of undistort those and straighten them back out so that they're in their original form, our desires are for God. That's what we naturally want. And so there's nothing else to do but to pursue that natural desire as best we can. And that means doing the work to shed the ego, to learn to love and forgive. And if it's slow, it's slow. But
it's a worthy goal.
It's the only goal.
It's the only goal. Oh, excellent. Okay, anything else on that point?
No.
Okay, number 7, philosophical system of ideas.
Yeah, so especially in the West, I mean, in the East, philosophy tends to be fused with spirituality. In the West, philosophy is this whole separate inquiry that's separate from spirituality and religion. It's separate from science. I wanted to be a philosopher. And so what you do in philosophy is you apply your powers of analytical reasoning to the big questions.
Well, then, by that definition, you are a philosopher.
Yeah, but not in the traditional mold.
Yeah.
You know, I'm following this weird channeled book, and I think that kind of disqualifies me.
Jesus plucked you off your traditional career path.
Yeah. That was my experience, and I wasn't too happy about that for a long time. But yeah, I got poached. That's how I feel.
I can relate.
Yeah. So, you know, in traditional philosophy in the West, you tackle these big questions. You know, what's real? That's what metaphysics is in philosophy. You know, what is fundamentally real? Is it matter and energy, which is the common view today, at least in the scientific world and the philosophical world? Or is mind a fundamental reality as well? Or is mind maybe the only fundamental reality, which is the position of idealism? There's also the issue of ethics. You know, what does it mean to live right in relation to other people and to honor, you know, right and wrong on a societal level? There's also the issue of epistemology. How do you know what you know? How do you come to know something and have confidence that it's true? And so,
what is the nature of consciousness itself?
That's philosophy of mind. Yeah. So, the course is not a traditional Western philosophical system, but there is a lot of Western philosophy. The process, because the course does a huge amount of reasoning. There's a huge amount of logic in the course, where he'll state a premise, and then draw from that deductively a conclusion, so that if you accept the premise, then you're kind of forced to accept the conclusion because it follows. You know, it necessarily follows. And so in the course, there's a great deal of philosophy in the sense of reasoning to conclusions that answer the big questions of life.
Okay. All right, let's move on. In the interest of time, let's move on to number 8, a literary work of art.
Yeah.
I feel like, before we move on.
Okay.
Did we give number 7 enough legs for you?
You know, I think that's out of our 9 categories, that's one of the more minor ones. So let's move on.
It's what you wanted to base your whole career on, and yet it's one of the minor points.
Well, this is not a talk about my career and my life. I guess the one thing I will say is the course, while employing some of the same forms as Western philosophy, it also has this this sense that there is a danger. You can get lost in all of that reasoning, and I think that's a really... that's a tendency that people have, especially more intellectually oriented people. You can get so lost in that process that you don't actually produce anything of value.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent point, because that's what I was thinking as you were speaking. Not that what you were saying wasn't interesting and relevant, but it's that these big philosophical questions, you can spin on them forever. And what I love about the course is the practicality of it, which is, you know, see your brother in this way, aim for a true vision, be loving, extend miracles. Like, it's just a real grounding of these big philosophical questions, but the questions themselves are important. So I'm not devaluing them.
Yeah. I kind of feel like Western philosophy, I feel like there's something tremendously important in the endeavor, and I feel like to some degree it's kind of lost its way. I mean, that's a whole other discussion. One thing that's great about science as opposed to philosophy is science can make progress because you have the experiment and you can disconfirm a hypothesis. And in philosophy, there's no objective way, really, to disconfirm a hypothesis. So you can spin and spin forever.
Yeah, and ask the same question 50 different ways. And let's move on.
Okay.
So number 8, a literary work of art. Oh, that is so true.
Yeah, it's interesting because the course is deeply intellectual. There's no getting around that. It's not a simple system. And yet, even though it's so intellectual, there is a huge element of art in there. Mm-hmm. A lot of the intellectual system of the course is not just these terms. It's terms that stand for, like, characters and that stand for images. You know, like what I mentioned in the article here is you have the characters of God, the ego, the Holy Spirit, you, and they are interacting with each other and moving through places: heaven, the world, the borderland, the gate of heaven, the lawns of heaven, and events: the separation, second coming, last judgment, the final step. So there's almost this flavor of the course as an intellectual system being like an epic story. And then the language of the course, I think that's where you most see the
art. Yeah, you don't mention the iambic pentameter here in the article, do you?
Yeah, there's a lengthy quote in my piece here from Greg Mackey's article, Appreciating the Masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And that lengthy quote does mention the iambic pentameter.
Okay.
So there, the language of the course is one of the things that draws people. There is a beauty. There's an, at times, aching beauty in the language.
And it's a shame that it mostly occurs towards the middle and the end of the text, because for new students who naturally start at chapter one, section one, the miracle principles are not the most beautiful language, not that soaring, lofty language. And so I feel like it's almost a shame, because no doubt you lose people who are not getting it quite so fast. And I myself was one of them. And I always tell new students, I'm like, wait for the miracle. Wait. Like, just keep going, because it does get better.
It does. Yeah. And it's almost as if Helen Schuckman is the channel, as if, you know, a channel is a space that something else passes through, you mm-hmm. know, like a pipe. And it's almost like the channel, that space, that pipe got bigger.
Yeah.
And there's more in terms of depth of content and beauty of language was able to come through. And so what happens in the text, for instance, is that in chapter 24, the text starts to come through in iambic pentameter, which is a traditional, you know, literary form in the English language that goes back before Shakespeare, even though it's often associated with Shakespeare. And iambic pentameter is where each line has 10 syllables, and those are 5 pairs, 5 feet. And in each foot, the accent's on the second syllable of the pair. So it's like 5 heartbeats. It's like da-dum, 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 da-dum. And so the last 7 or so chapters of the text are largely in iambic pentameter. And then in the workbook, starting with lesson 98, all the way through to the end of the workbook, it's in practically perfect iambic pentameter.
Jesus is such a show-off.
What's interesting is Helen didn't even notice it for a while in the text.
How was it pointed out to her?
I don't know. At some point, if you look at her notebooks, mm-hmm. You can tell she didn't notice it, because she'd fiddle with wording here and there in ways that hurt the meter.
Uh-huh.
And once she noticed it, she really wouldn't do that. And then as she noticed it later on, she would put little like double quote marks to divide the lines of iambic pentameter.
Mm-hmm.
So you could tell that she's tracking it as she goes.
And I've always heard that the iambic pentameter was a gift, a special gift to Helen, because she was such a Shakespeare fan. Is that true?
Well, I know she believed that. I don't know if there's any actual, we don't have record of that being told to her.
Mm-hmm.
But she had aspirations to be a poet, and she had a gift for words, I think.
Helen got poached, too. We all got poached.
You know, she had such a gift for words. She was such a gifted
writer. Her poems are really lovely.
But the poems were channeled.
Oh, they were?
They were channeled.
All of them?
All of them.
Oh, wow.
She didn't write those.
Oh.
You have to read things like her autobiography. And she had a wryness and an ability to compress so much into so few words. And obviously, he was using that. I mean, if you're using a channel, if you want to write music through a channel, you need a channel with musical ability, right? Mm-hmm. And so he needed a channel with a gift for words. Mm-hmm. And the course has that. So that beauty of the language is a major component of it. And there's a purpose to it. It's not just so it's pretty and people buy the book. It's because the course is trying to move our minds into new spaces, and beautiful language does that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you read it and you're genuinely moved by it because the language is so beautiful. And so that beauty in the language is serving a real purpose in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there is a sense in which the course is genuinely a work of art.
Yeah, truly. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Greg was right.
Yeah.
Okay, so anything else you want to say on that?
I think let's move on.
Okay, to the last one, which is a manual for how to heal others, heal relationships, and save the world.
Yeah, so this
saving the best for last.
This category is kind of a grab bag, but you know, we're used to books out there about, you know, how to be healing in relation to others, about how to heal relationships. And I think there's just a heavy element of all of that in the Course, where it's not, we think of, because of how focused on the self contemporary spirituality is and contemporary society is, we think of the Course as it's for the individual. But when it says it's a Course in Miracles, the main sense of miracle is very much like you see in the Gospels, something that you extend to somebody else. You know, in the Gospels, you have Jesus going around and giving miracles to people in need. And then you have him sending his disciples out to do the exact same thing. And that image of there is something divine that can pass through a person and be given to somebody else and have a healing effect, a transformative effect on that other person, that's what we're mainly supposed to hear when we read that title, A Course in Miracles. So the Course is not just trying to help you feel at peace. It's trying to turn you in to a miracle worker, an instrument for the salvation of the world, where you actually become a force for good in the world. And so it's very much about the relational dimension, the interpersonal dimension, and the dimension of what one person can do to play a part in the uplifting of the entire world. And after, it's not here in this article, but it really ought to be, mm-hmm. because this actually is how the Course came about. Helen and Bill weren't saying, we want inner peace.
Right.
They were saying, we can't get along with each other. We can't get along with everybody else in our department. We can't get along with the other departments. We can't get along with the other medical centers. You know, we need a better way. And that better way was not about inner peace. And it wasn't about God. It was about how people could get along.
And it worked.
And it worked. Their department was transformed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a success story.
Yeah. So, you think of a concept like heal the world and it just seems like enlightenment. It's just too big, and so why even bother? But if you really take to heart what you just said about we each have our own individual roles in the salvation of the world, and we usually get poached to do them, but really taking that to heart and doing the work.
Well, and what we do, what we think, what we do, what we feel, it ripples out.
Yeah.
It affects the people in our sphere. And if the Course is right, it ends up rippling out and the ripples don't stop. It affects everyone. So one person can make a difference. There are a lot of us here. A lot of us are needed to make a difference. But we shouldn't underestimate the power of one person's actions to influence and to uplift other people.
Well, that seems like a good place to end. Thank you, Robert. And thank you all for listening. I hope that we have answered. I feel like it's a very long answer to the question of what is A Course in Miracles. I'm not sure that we really condensed it for folks, but it was a lovely discussion nonetheless.
I think the big takeaway for me is all of these seemingly very disparate categories, so different from each other, he found a way to rework all of them so that they fit seamlessly together into this new category that only A Course in Miracles occupies. And it's just a masterful, you know, taking of acknowledged familiar categories and reworking them so that all the rooms, all the walls get knocked out. Now the rooms are joined together and now you have one really large, airy, and very unique room.
Yeah, lovely. All right. Thank you, Robert. And for anyone listening that wants to download a copy of Robert's article, What is A Course in Miracles? Please visit circleofa.org/1. I'm Emily Bennington. This is A Course in Miracles Radio from the Circle of Atonement. We will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to A Course in Miracles Radio from the Circle of Atonement. To learn more about the complete and annotated edition of A Course in Miracles and our course-based training programs, please visit circleofa.org.